This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to Bugle issue 176, sub-episode Gimel. Bet. Sorry, bit rusty with the old Hebrew alphabet. Shalom, and a belated happy Schmucks Day to all you Gentiles out there. Oy vey. I'm Andy Zoltzman, the 2011 Bugle Podcast Man and Woman of the Year, and this is part two of the Bugle Review of 2011. Easily one of the most exciting years of the decade so far, a year that's had more twists and turns than the World Chinese Burn Championships. Boom! Last week in sub-episode Aleph, shalom again. We look back at the fall of some of the world's premier knuckles, some of whom relinquished not only their hold on power, but also their ability to keep breathing. This week, we'll look back on some of the other hilarious goings on around the world, entertaining bloopers such as the European financial crisis, which has left Europe looking as stable and confident as a pissed tightrope walker who's just wet himself. We'll also be looking at the phone hacking schmozzle, involving the Bugle's own now-deceased rogue step-uncle, the News of the World. We'll look back to Britain, putting its wrongs to riot, and the darkest moment of a turbulent year, the royal wedding, when Prince William, the future King of the Universe, Emperor of all the Europes and Nabob of Nantwich, married the former Hampshire and England Day opening batsman, Tony Middleton. Man, does he look better post-op. But where else to start than with the near death of Newt Gingrich in a trapeze accident during the halftime show of Super Bowl XLV, so called in honour of the pro-musical mayhem pressure group Xylophonists Love Violence. Well, I'll tell you where, with the moment that Britain went window shopping crazy like never before, with the inaugural 3 for the price of 0 August sales.
Top story this week, greatest week in the UK ever, reports Window Repairers Monthly. Andy, Britain really put itself in the shop window for tourism this week before throwing a brick through that shop window and stealing anything of value inside it. It was quite nostalgic for me watching the news, seeing so many streets and buildings that I used to know. They were a little bit more on fire than I remembered them being when I was living in London, but the memory can play tricks on you. Maybe I'm romanticising it by not picturing it in flames. The UK has seen a week of rioting, and for the first time in a long time, it had absolutely nothing to do with sport. The spark that ignited this mayhem was the killing of a young black man in Tottenham by police. The police initially seemed to claim that he had shot at them before seemingly taking that back and saying that he had looked at them instead. But those two gestures are very easy to mistake with each other, Andy, and let's admit they're both bad. But what initially began as a protest at that incident quickly became something else, that being the perfect synthesis of social dissatisfaction combined with the profound British love for smashing things. We love smashing things, Andy. We're like the Greeks with plates, except instead of smashing plates, we like to smash small businesses whose owners have worked hard for years to build them up and which provide essential services to communities. They make a much more satisfying sound when you smash them.
Well, this week has showed Britain veering wildly between its atrocious worst and its blitz-spirity best, swinging from one to the other like an indecisive transsexual at a water-drinking contest trying to decide which toilet to use. And I guess it's the love of free things that has proved to be Britain's Achilles head in this incident. And I don't know, there's been a lot of debate, John, as to as to what has caused this. And I've thought about this... about this quite a lot, particularly as the latest news has come through that President Assad of Syria has called for calm on the streets of London. Colonel Gaddafi said David Cameron should resign, but that he is open to a solution whereby Cameron is allowed to stay in the UK. And the Queen has been on the roof of Buckingham Palace, quote, prepared to duke it out with any f***er who wants it. So, also, the government of Sierra Leone have offered to send 10,000 troops to restore order to the streets of Battersea. So, it's been tough times, but it's been a lot of, you've got to think about what has caused this. And I guess to understand this, John, we have to try and understand the thought processes of the looters as they were looting. And I guess what they were thinking was, oh, look at all that looting. I wonder if I should join in. There are a number of factors urging me to do so. I feel a sense of social alienation, as if people like me have been abandoned by mainstream society as the unwanted dregs of a skewed and unfair system. I feel a lack of hope. There are few jobs, even fewer good jobs. I just can't see the opportunity to escape from the cycle of poverty, broken homes and broken communities around me, from generations of decline and neglect. Let down by the state, let down by my family, let down by a pitiless capitalist system which has scant regard for the unfortunate. I feel disenfranchised by a political system and class that fails to engage or represent me. And when I see the excesses and unbridled acquisitiveness at the top of the economic food chain, the corruption and self-interest in my nation's media and politics, I feel even more abandoned by a nation not of my making. Adding all that up and seeing the opportunity for some seriously cut price bargains, well, no price bargains, well, I still don't really feel like looting. Oh, hang on, I've just remembered. I'm a Count me in. Count me in. I knew there was a crucial ingredient missing there. I'd clean forgotten I was a lawless basilic. I have the brain of a gnat who's just retired from an overlong career in gnat boxing. I have the soul of an unusually prickish hyena. I'll put my looting kit on and I will get busy.
Statements of support, Andy, came in from all across the world, perhaps none more powerfully delivered than one during an interview with Richard Bacon on BBC Radio 5 by Hulk Hogan, who said, and I quote, "You know, it doesn't really matter if Hulk Hogan is over there body-slamming all the youth like I did Andre the Giant, but at the end of the day, we need to grab these kids, shake them and say, stop, regroup. Just look at yourself in the mirror. Is this what you want the mirror image of your life to be? Is this what you want your destiny to be? No, it's time to change directions. Even if the state has to step in and really focus on getting these kids back on track. But you know what? I will do anything. Because I love my UK Hulkamaniacs. And you know what? They love him back, Andy. Hence their ridiculous name. It's hard to know where to begin with a speech like that. It was Hulk Hogan's Gettysburg Address. A call for unity in a country tearing itself apart. And it's also good to know that if things do get out of hand, that Hulk Hogan might yet come down to the streets of Southall, or the streets of Brixton, or the streets of Lewisham, and start, and I quote, body slamming all the youth like he did Andre the Giant. It's gonna be okay, Andy.
Ich bin ein Hulkamaniac.
Happily, since then, Nice Britain has kept Nasty Britain largely under wraps, and the nation has returned to its appointed role of watching karaoke and dancing on the telly, and grumbling about things happening in Europe that we don't fully comprehend. But let's look back now to a time when Britain was joyful, optimistic, and just that little bit bunty about the marriage of the future heir to the throne to the former pauper and Victorian workhouse orphan, Kate Middleton. For once, Britain was united in happiness that their marriage gave this country a free day off work.
Top story this week. F*** everything else that's happening in the world. The wedding is nearly here. Andy, I know I'm not alone in thinking this because the sheer number of news crews that have been descending all week on London, the 32-time capital of the entire world... The upcoming royal wedding is the only thing that anyone in their right mind should be giving a shit about at the moment. I think most international news organisations are going to be sending a very coherent message over the next 7 days. And that message is, Yemen, f*** it. Syria, f*** it. Fukushima nuclear plant, f*** it. Royal weddings, f*** yeah!
But moving on to the rest of the world now, and Libya news. And the situation in Libya continues to descend into a seemingly irretrievable slough of chaos as casualties mount and the bloodshed spreads, with NATO caught in a seemingly intractable problem of having to...
Shut up, Andy! Shut up, Andy! That has nothing to do with the wedding! Royal wedding news again now! And Prince Charles has apparently just become a record holder, Andy. But you're right, Andy, there are some significant events happening in the world that are not wedding-related. Nigerian election news now. And good luck, Jonathan, the greatest named leader on the planet right now, won the Nigerian election this week. And
shut up, John! I've just got some exclusive royal wedding gift list news now, and the gift list has been leaked. Well, that's all very well done, but it's time to focus on some of the serious stuff that's going on in the world.
You're right.
Japan updates now, and the Japanese government has announced a 4 trillion yen, that's around about...
Shut up, Andy! That is not wedding-related! Shut up! Oh, sorry, Andy. What was that going to be, wedding related?
Well, I guess indirectly. I mean, you know, it's a 50
Shut
billion
up!
Emergency budget for disaster relief. But I guess that means they're not going to give quite as much to the wedding fund. So I guess that's tangentially related.
Shut up, Andy! If it's not directly related, I do not want to hear
it. Well, I guess it's maybe trying to stop Kate Middleton suffering radiation sickness emanating from Japan before the big day on Friday.
Okay, I'll let it stand.
Okay, good.
In other royal wedding news, it's been revealed that Prime Minister David Cameron will, in fact, wear tails to the wedding. By which I mean a morning suit. Not that he's going to wear the tail of a zebra, a horse and a squirrel on the back of his trousers.
Okay, it's not going to be a game of pin the tail on the Prime Minister.
No. But look, Andy, we've had a bit of fun, but the fact is the world is in turmoil at the moment and there's plenty of things that we need to be talking about, OK? Yeah. Haitian update now, and Michel Martelly has officially been declared Haitian president.
Yada, 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 John. No one cares, John. No one cares about that. That is, at best, other news. Because the details of Princess Kate Middleton's dress have just emerged. It has turned out that she will be the first ever princess to wear a royal wedding dress that is wireless compatible.
Top story this week. Here comes the bride. There goes the bride. Now let's all go kill Prince Charles and the Queen so she can take her rightful place on the throne. Just kidding. I'll give it 6 years. Well, we did it, Andy. We did it. And when I say we, I mean England. And when I say England, I mean Prince William and the woman once called Kate Middleton, and who is now called, if I'm not mistaken, Kate Prince William. I'm pretty sure that's right. Pretty sure.
The palace have insisted that from now on she will be officially referred to as Princess K-Dog. Because she's both traditional and modern, and I think that gets that across.
Noticeably, Kate took the obey part out of the vow, and regarding the vows, I also thought that she could take out the for poorer bit of the for richer for poorer part. Or I don't think they'll be needing that.
Or at least just said afterwards, yeah, but realistically, just for richer.
So, as you say, the guests are currently at the wedding reception at Buckingham Palace right now, where they are reportedly eating royal hot dogs, which is, of course, corgis in a hot dog bun smeared with relish and mustard. If you think that's disgusting, ask yourself this. Is it any more disgusting, realistically, than a regular hot dog? Also, don't act surprised. Why do you think the Queen has so many corgis? She's been farming them for meat. For meat, Andy!
And here's another royal wedding bit from deep in the archives of Britain.
And a very warm welcome to the BBC Imperium programme. I am Hubert Scratch, and joining me in the Abbey today is our royalty and subservience correspondent, Mr. Stanley Grankerton. And Stanley, one has to say that on this very special day, the Abbey is looking absolutely resplendent.
It certainly is, Hubert. Well done, God. Terrific effort from the big man. Certainly a good decision to strip off that layer of glittery pink paint that Queen Victoria insisted on having. Flowers everywhere. Some freshly slaughtered tigers representing the natural world.
Oh, yes, it's some of them still twitching, in fact. A truly wonderful sight and an even more wonderful smell. And here comes the prince with that characteristic hop of his.
Yeah. There he goes, Hubert. That famous stag night really got out of hand.
Certainly did, Stanley. Doesn't look like it's growing back in a hurry. He stops at the entrance to the abbey and, yes, whack, 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 whack again. He ceremonially beats the representative from every nation of the empire with his special wedding stick. And a specially resounding whacking for the Indian ambassador there.
Well played. Well played. Super strike there. There's another one. Get stuck in, lad. That's it. That's it. Guess that should stifle any thought of independence for a few decades. Marvellous stuff.
Yeah, wonderful technique from the friend of Prince. Controlled backswing, rhythmical downthwack, and a lovely snap of the wrist to accelerate the whack at the moment of contact.
So reminiscent, Hubert, of his great father, who will be a very proud king today.
Yes, the prince has gone in with a mahogany stick today for a more solid whack on his special occasion, rather than the greater flexion and snap of the birch. The shiny brass tip and silver hand in the shape of a Victorian prostitute glinting in the Westminster sunlight. That's Edward the VII's old stick, of course, and my goodness me, was that used well.
Oh, rather, that stick has been serviced on an awfully large number of batons. Rather amusing incident there, Hubert. The Archbishop of Canterbury, the unfathomably Reverend Vladimir Scraffleyard, he stubbed his toe on the font, and I'm afraid to say rather let himself down linguistically there.
Did he? I'll take your word for that, Stanley. I'm afraid c*** is not a term I'm acquainted with.
Well, that surprises me, Hubert. I'd have imagined you heard it quite a lot. And the groom is ceremonially fondling the princess's chambermaids now. Some excellently thorough groping going on there. And yes, it looks like he's very well satisfied that none of them is quite, cuddleable as the princess herself.
And that's a very great relief for everyone, Stanley. No one wanted to see another Louis IV of Hesse and Princess Alice incident.
Yes, that lady has a quite ferociously vengeful slap upon her.
And the Archbishop now is just checking the prince for syphilis. Yes, he's in the clear. That's good. That's good.
That makes a nice change.
And here it is. That toot of the trumpets can mean only one thing. Yes.
Lovely.
Yes, it
lovely.
Is. Princess
lovely.
Time. And
yes.
Here comes
Come
Princess Marina now.
There she is.
Into the abbey.
Oh.
And...
Oh.
Oh. Oh, lordy.
Oh, heckity heck. My word.
Oh, yeah.
Will you look at that? Good golly, Miss Molly.
In the name of King George, I think every man in the Empire would not mind doing his duty with that.
Oh, mercy. Mercy, mercy me. I don't mind telling you. I wouldn't mind dipping it in that, Hubert.
Dip away, Stanley. It's a Stilton and chive mayonnaise my wife made for my packed lunch. Carrot?
Don't mind if I do, Hubert.
Bit of fun.
Bit of history there for you. You're welcome. Incidentally, I have no further news on the future of the Bugle. Do keep your eyes open for updates. As soon as we know anything, we will project it onto the night sky around the world, or possibly put up a message on the @HelloBuglers Twitter feed and the Bugle Facebook page. On now to the moment that Britain realised that its previously morally unimpeachable newspapers, those incorrigible bastions of fact, probity and the pursuit of truth and justice, could, on occasion, let their moral underpants slip. And what did we see in those underpants? Let's not talk too much about it. Suffice it to say that hacking into the voicemails of murder victims, the relatives of deceased war heroes and actress Sienna Miller did not go down too well with the public at large.
News of the world news now, hack attack! Today, Andy, is the final edition of the News of the World, the notorious British Sunday tabloid paper. It will be missed by people who like to knowingly or otherwise have their faith in humanity drained out of them every Sunday. Otherwise, it will not be missed at all. If you managed to avoid this story over the past week, Buglers, then congratulations, but you might want to put some plastic clothing over your soul now before you hear about it, because you're about to wade into some depressingly murky waters. The 168-year-old... miraculously, mysteriously long-running tabloid is accused of hacking into phones of not just celebrities, which was clearly illegal, but nothing that seemed to get anyone's anger up that far. But then it emerged that they were also hacking the phones of politicians, murder victims, terror victims, dead British soldiers, and their families. Police have identified 4,000 possible targets, with missing murder victims' phones. They were even reportedly checking their messages and deleting some of them to allow space for more to be left, thus giving their family false hope that they were still alive. This is the moment, Buglers, where you really need to take your soul down to a car wash to have it industrially sprayed down.
But I think with the current slew of allegations, it is fair to say that the nation and probably the wider world has agreed that the News of the World had gone one step too far, and that one step was over the edge of a f***ing massive and already crumbling cliff. It did not just cross the line, John. It drove through the line in a high-speed tank, reversed back over the line, picked it up, taped the line back together, headbutted it, released the line into the woods, ran after it, kidnapped it, chained it to a radiator in its dungeon, fed it half a slice of stale bread and a glass of water every day, and whacked the line round the kneecaps with a baseball bat every morning before releasing it and saying, "Right, line, I never want to see you anywhere near one of my articles again, comprendo." So the Murdochs did act decisively and quickly. They didn't just pull the plug on the publication. They wrapped the chain that the plug was on around the News of the World's neck and kept pulling it until the twitching stopped, which was pretty rapidly. And thus, a slice of British journalistic history was brought to a splutteringly rapid end. And what had happened was the advertisers, who had previously thought that pointlessly and illegally hacking celebrities and politicians' phones was absolutely fine, became appalled by the latest allegations and were pulling out in droves like a Catholic orgy. It's become clear that in the world of tabloid journalism, ethics were just a county that you had to drive through on the way to pap a celebrity in a rehab centre in Suffolk. Morals were just what you needed when trying to play Welsh Scrabble. Morals. Values were just the female sheep that used to be tended on the TV kid show Blue Peter by the famous presenter Valerie Singleton. Decency was how a travel agent might describe the Adriatic. Decency, not one of the all-time greats in my book, but does a job for you year in, year out. Integrity, that was just a handy description of film director Mike Lee. He's integrity. And good behaviour is something that you would say whilst trying to butter up a champion apiarist in order to get them to tell you all the sordid gossip on who the Queen Bee had been shagging. Good beehive, yeah? Good beehive, yep. I'm done. I'm done on that lot. I'm done. I think that was... that was satirically and artistically valid, John.
Well, Andy, the News of the World scandal has deepened this week, taking all the attention of News International staff. I presume that's the case, as they definitely can't have had time to listen to the Bugle last week. Otherwise, I'm pretty sure we wouldn't be doing this right now.
So, as you said, we are still here, which means, well, either, I mean, possibly means that no one in News International listens to the Bugle, or that they do listen to the Bugle, but they've been a bit busy with other stuff this week, and they're going to catch up shortly. Or that they have listened to last week's Bugle and fully endorse every word said on it, and every word said in your piece, which you stuck the boot in on the Daily Show.
I put my boot somewhere, and then I see as they ran extremely hard into it with the things that they did. My boot was stationary. They ran into my foot, Andy.
Well, I guess that will be settled in a court of law, John, with the help of a physicist. But anyway, I thought I'd better find out for sure. So I hacked into Rupert Murdoch's phone.
And oh, that's good.
Would you believe it that his hold music, John, is you singing Bon Jovi's Bed of Roses? And 95% of all of his voicemails are just Rebecca Brooks ringing up and going on about what an absolute dreamboat I am. And trying to persuade Rupert to sanction an Andy Zaltzman swimwear calendar to put out with the Sunday Times.
Wow.
Well, I won't do it, Brooks. I'm not a f***ing piece of meat. Unless by swimwear you mean whale skin. I guess that's swimwear of a sort for whales. And I want the whales still alive. I'll do your calendar, even though you have now resigned since I wrote the joke. I will do this calendar only if you can arrange for me to be non-fatally eaten by a whale, Jonah style. Because I've always wondered, John, what Jonah must have thought whilst inside that whale, because you know the Bible writers would have spun it like a teenage Chinese ice skater at triple salchow practice. Of course, the official line is that God sent the whale, gave little Jonah a complimentary three-night full-board mini-break inside it, and then made the whale puke him out in time to get home for his Thursday bridge night. But Jonah's personal diary, however, suggests a slightly different story, recently declassified under the Freedom of Information Act. Day one. F*** me, I've been swallowed by a fucking whale. I thought I was toast when those sailors took me at my word and lobbed me into the fucking sea, but I've been swallowed by a whale. I always wondered what it would be like to be a bit of plankton. This is going to be awesome. The trip of a lifetime. Day two. It is fucking disgusting in here. It absolutely stinks of rotting fish, stomach acids everywhere, and the gas. Don't even get me started on the gas. I really need to tidy my room. And the big watery bastard stomach muscles keep contracting and expanding, trying to fucking digest me. So I can't even get 20 minutes kip without being launched around his belly like a rabbit on a roller coaster. Oh, shit. I seriously cannot see being eaten by a whale catching on as a novelty adventure holiday. This whale seriously needs to eat some dried apricots if I ever want to get out of here. I am at the end of my tether, TBH. A diet of half-digested krill and plankton carpaccio is not doing my figure any good whatsoever. And I'm pretty sure this whale doesn't keep kosher either. It's dark. Please excuse my hand... What is that? Handwriting? Oh, handwriting. Oh, yeah. And I've been holding my breath for 36 hours now. Day 3. I feel shit. Whale shit. Everywhere. All around me. I've got to get out of here. Through this digestive phase, I've been largely dissolved, I've had most of my bones crushed, and I'm now suffering serious oxygen deprivation. I'm beginning to think I might die in here. Hang on now, sounds like the whale's unfolding a newspaper. Must be a copy of Aquatic Mammals Daily. He's turning to the back page. He's settling down. Yes! Cryptic crossword, that could mean only one thing. I'm out of here! I've had some rocky relationships in my time, but I never thought I'd be so glad to get dumped. Day 4. Back home safe. God's been in touch. He told me not to sell my story or he'll whack me out with a lightning bolt. He can be a really domineering boss sometimes. So controlling. Obsessed with the growth of his empire, even if he's increasingly out of touch and relies on his staff lower down the company hierarchy to do his dirty work for him. Typical tycoon. Anywho, he wants me to hold a press conference this afternoon and say that it was a f***ing breeze being eaten by a whale and that I was vomited up, not crapped out. He says he'll do one of his magic corrective surgeries on me, so I guess I'll have to suck it up. I don't see why he thinks the Bible-reading public are going to buy that patent bullshit, or why being chundered is so much more saleable as a story than being shat. But hey, he's the gaffer, and he'd better give me a really flashy new donkey for this as a deal sweetener. There you go.
Well, good point, Andy.
Yep.
Good point. Well made.
No point. Longly made. I think that's what we meant.
That's what I meant to say. Andy, it's hard for any franchise to withstand a third instalment without just getting sad. The third Godfather movie wasn't great, the third Back to the Future seemed a bit desperate, and the third Love Guru movie is going to hypothetically bring down the medium of cinema. And the same is true.
Well, what's going to build it up in the meantime?
the second one. The same is true with this third week of News of the World Revelations, which started 2 weeks ago as shocking, became exciting, and is now just looking depressing. The circus even had its own clown, attempting to entertain the crowd with some tired, misplaced slapstick, when someone from the public gallery attempted to push a shaving cream pie into Rupert Murdoch's face. I'm not saying, Andy, that Rupert Murdoch's face does not look better with a shaving cream pie in it. It complements it perfectly. But there's a time and a place for doing that, and it was emphatically neither then nor there. You just don't want to find yourself with any misplaced sympathy for Rupert Murdoch. And when you see an 80-year-old man looking frightened, your heart can mistakenly go out to him. Hello? Is this thing still on? I can't work out why this microphone is still working, Andy. Hello?
I guess in summary, whoops. To perk the mood up, here are some pure lies. Well, here are some more pure lies, but these are good ones about people who are pretend and therefore can't have their lives ruined by them. Hopefully.
Other news now, the celebrity international celebrity chef, Sklooten Malvane, has defended using a fast-acting poison in one of his dishes. At his famous New York brasserie, Belchissima, after a non-life-endangering starter of regretful wood pigeon hand-haunted in a memory of asparagus wrongdoings, bondage to a bed of covertly assassinated scallops and hard-punched potato faces, Malvane served his customers a plate of penisless chicken supremes in a potassium cyanide jus. The dish, described as, quote, initially delicious, succulent and Moorish, but subsequently rapidly fatal, is then swiftly followed by a palate-cleansing kaffir-lime red peppercorn and hydroxycobalamin granita, providing a refreshing and life-saving antidote for the desperately gasping diners. Most make a full recovery in time for the main course, a high-speed car crash tenderised paragon of overbearingly mothered beef groin with a Hasidic reductio, gruffly manhandled chanterelle mushroom willies and a pert bouncer of cabbage tits. Some have described the experience as, quote, an interesting twist on the traditional dining experience. Others say that, quote, almost dying early in the meal makes you really appreciate being alive for the cheese board, although some have complained that the cyanide left them with irreparable physical and psychological damage that no amount of doggy bags to take home and complimentary napkins can compensate for. Malvane's other restaurants include Testiculate in Chicago, La Jolie Fornicateurs in Paris, The Screaming Shithead in Buenos Aires, and London's new controversial, abusively staffed Mexican Antarctic Fusion Insulter Bistro. These, of course, all run alongside his famous San Francisco delicatessen and sex shop, Gherkins and Merkins.
Malvane commented, food is about more than flavours and textures. It's about emotions and passions. And when do people get more emotional than when they think they're about to die? Other than when they're rescued from the precipice of oblivion. Now put your hands in the air and stop breathing or I'll shoot you. Just kidding, have a pickled onion. Tastes pretty sweet, eh? Die, motherfucker, die! Ah, got you again. Spam fritter, don't mind if you do.
You've been very rude today, Andy.
Sorry, yeah. Chris.
Very rude.
You're overtired, Andy.
All right.
And you're showing off.
18 f**ks and 3 f**ks already.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, economically, the world has hammered itself full in the nutsack often enough in recent years, and Europe, for so long one of the Northern Hemisphere's leading few continents, has continued hammering, seemingly in the hope of that nutsack miraculously turning into a beautiful butterfly. Just like in the kids' book The F***ing Hungry Caterpillar, usually published, of course, under its censored name, in which prolonged and excessively gluttonous consumption, followed by a minor balancing measure to rectify it, leads to everything being absolutely fine. Thank you, children's author and illustrator, Eric Carle. You have been the economic inspiration for the world, and you f***ing ruined everyone's Christmas.
Let's spare a thought for Belgium, who have now been without a government for over 280 days, breaking the world record for a country waiting for a government. The record was previously held by Iraq, although let's not rule out Iraq trying to take that record back in the not-too-distant future. And your Belgians have reacted appropriately, Andy, by celebrating their world-beating dysfunctional behaviour. They've held events across the country to mark the occasion. Apparently, in Leuven and in Dutch-speaking Flanders, locals handed out free French fries, whilst in Louvain de Neuve and in French-speaking Wallonia, free beer was on offer. Now, good for them, Andy. Now, I'm glad they're celebrating, but I think we're all thinking the same thing. Where the f*** were the waffles there, Andy? Where were the victory waffles? You just broke a world record. Treat yourselves to the only foodstuff everyone else on Earth thinks that you eat. Where were the waffles? In fact, Time magazine, Andy, ran this story last week under this headline, and I quote, Belgian waffling. See? It's not just us. Even a legitimate news source, albeit in a dying medium, cannot resist a waffle joke. It can't be done.
Top story this week, Greece is the turd.
And we talked a little about Greece last week, Andy, and frankly, everything that's happened in Greece since then has been like an economic soap opera. I keep expecting a Greek politician to approach Prime Minister George Papandreou and say, I have bad news, George. The national economy is contracted by 5.5% this fiscal year. And what's more, I'm sleeping with your wife. In fact, Andy, the events have been so ludicrous and have happened so fast, it might help to have a little soap opera recap now. A little story so far.
Previously on Greece. Last week, when you left us, magnificently moustached Greek George had dropped to his knees and begged European leaders for help. In Germany, Italian horn dog Silvio was still trying to apologise to German bombshell Angela for calling her an unfuckable lardass. French munchkin Nicholas offered polish-headed Papandreou a bailout 130 billion euros with a 50% write-off of its debts in return for deeply unpopular austerity measures. And the Greeks basically mailing their balls to Brussels. So, would George be able to convince the Greeks to accept that deal? Would the Greek people be able to raise enough money to pay for the postage to mail those balls? Would Silvio ever stop dry-humping the table leg? Find out that and more on this week's episode of Greece.
Well, the acting has been absolutely terrible, John. Just so unconvincing. You just don't really believe anyone means what they say. But at last, John, the deal was agreed, a not entirely fragrant cocktail of a 100 billion euro mega loan and a 50% debt write-off. And after all the uncertainties, the doom-mongering, the fears of a total meltdown of the entire continent's economy and its currency, at last, this was something to rebuild on, something everyone had compromised on, to thrash out a deal that gave at least a hedgehog's willy of hope for the future. It was a relief all round that finally the worst might be over. And then Greek Prime Minister George Papandreou, he paused for a minute, he put on his most serious face,
Then his cheek started twitching slightly, and he frowned over seriously. He coughed a little, and his chin started to quiver. The eyes creased slightly at the corners. The neck tensed up as a micro-chuckle half escaped his throat. His shoulder started to rise and fall. His eyes clenched shut. His head bowed. No, he couldn't hold it in any longer. How are we going to have a referendum? Priceless. You should see the look on your faces. Got you. Got a lot of you. Oh, yes. That was worth the wait. What are you all looking at me like that for? How are we going to help Greece out of this mess? I mean, I think the Eurozone countries, they now have to be strong and unified. That's important. In fact, I would say that's the key. They've
Not 2 weeks in a row.
They've got just about got away without everything collapsing so far. But next time, they might not be so lucky.
No, this is bullshit.
So what can be done?
Bullshit.
What a mess, eh? So there's no point feeling bitter and twisted about it. You can see why people aren't happy with spending so much on the bailout. I didn't pay my taxes for this, they think. And as for Papandreou, what a spanner. Cop it. I think he will in tonight's no confidence vote.
Stop it!
He needs to sort
it
out fast,
John. Stop it!
He needs to work fast.
Stop it!
He needs to hurry or Tiki investors will pull out. They'll say, Rhett, seen enough! you sack of shit! So quick. Looming on the horizon could be even worse to come. Sorry to be a prophet of doom. Come on, John. Come on. Just trying to see the funny side of a very dark situation. Come on, mate. Have a sense of humour.
Oh, off!
You've got a baklava about it.
Europe. God rest its soul. But at least Europe could joyfully high-five itself in celebration that there is now one fewer escaped Serbian warlord on the loose on this continent than there was this time last year.
And if you're one of those people that buys cartons of milk with the photographs of missing European war criminals on the back, then one face in particular has been staring at you over your cornflakes over the last decade. Ratko Mladic. But no more. Ratko has thankfully been found and returned to the loving arms of the War Crimes Tribunal at The Hague. One thing's for sure, Andy, international fugitives are having a bad, bad year, 2011. You know, Bin Laden, now this, 16 years on the run for Mladic, Andy. Well, not so much on the run as living in Serbia the whole time without really being bothered by the Serbian authorities. It wasn't even 16 years on the jog, Andy. It was more 16 years on the pleasant afternoon stroll.
And on the running machine. On the treadmill. On a slow-moving treadmill.
16 years on the treadmill. He faces accusations, including a genocide charge over the killing of about 7,500 Bosnian Muslim men and boys at Srebrenica in 1995. Good luck OJing your way out of that one, Ratko. Lightning is going to have to strike 7,500 times in the same place for you to dodge this one.
But as you say, it's amazing. Since the royal wedding, John, it's just been one unending festival of killing or capturing the world's most wanted men. First Bin Laden, then Ryan Giggs, and now Ratko Mladic. What when the magic wears off, though, John? I mean, that's... I think William and Kate are going to have to divorce and remarry at least once every 2 months just to keep the world safe.
Well... You know why I'd be happy about that idea. Oh. Detonate the A-bomb, someone get the codes.
There you go. That just about wraps it up for the Bugle Review of 2011. Did anything else happen this year? No. That's all the events in the world. I do hope that the tragic death of Father Christmas in a 430-mile-an-hour sleigh crash in Melbourne, Australia, as reported exclusively live on the Bugle Twitter feed on Christmas Eve, did not put too much of a dampener on your festive celebrations. A replacement for Santa Claus will be announced in January, with the front runners in the betting including ex-Yankees coach Joe Torre, former British Prime Minister Tony Blair, he might not be getting brandy and mince pies if he comes down people's chimneys, entrepreneur and aviation enthusiast Richard Branson, he's the bookie's favourite, his whole business career has been modelled on Santa Claus's early years, and democracy ace Aung San Suu Kyi, who could be on course to become the first female Santa Claus for more than 75 years. All in all, 2011 has been a fascinating year for planet Earth, but a mixed year for John Oliver. He's ended up with one more wife, dog and career home run than he started it with, but also one more appearance in a Smurf movie. So, ups and downs for the lad. But the unquestionable highlight of John's year amidst all the hectic toings and froings of his showbiz lifestyle was the chance to take the stage alongside the British comedy legend that is Andy Zaltzman. So, to play you out for 2011, here is the moment that John and I first took to the same stage together in Britain for over 5 years. We'll be back next week with the first Bugle of 2012, Bugle 177, our penultimate Times Online Bugle. In the meantime, do send us your emails to info@thebuglepodcast.com and keep up to date with the latest Bugle news and freshly laid bullshit on the Twitter feed at Hello Buglers. Goodbye, Buglers. Goodbye, 2011. Here's that bit from that gig in Edinburgh.
Yes! 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 Hello, we're back like we've never been away, Andy.
Where were you lot 5 years ago? So,
I'd never have had to leave if you'd just been here 5 years ago, but you pushed me away! I didn't leave, you forced me out!
So, how's it been in America, John? How's it been going?
Right. It's been very pleasant, yeah. Andy. It's yeah. Great living in a country that is watching its empire slip through its fingers. It's like living in a country with the wind of history rushing past your ears. I was in America this morning, so I'm f***ing tired. That's not a joke. That's a stone cold biological fact.
Yeah. Have you got any jokes?
Wow, you got f***ing abrasive in 5 years. Jesus, the dynamic of this double actor space. And I remember you leaning over to me and saying, got any jokes? Okay, I'll handle it then. Jesus.
Let me fill in.
Do you want me to be your hype man? I can come in every fourth word if you like.
So, when I look at the state of the world, I become quite a pessimistic man.
Listen to him.
Very pessimistic.
Very.
I guess, in that respect, I'm a bit like a German vegetarian. I fear the worst. Watch and learn, Pickles. Watch and learn.
That joke had about a 60% approval rating there, but that was a very vocal 40%. You managed to Gaddafi your way through that one, but I don't know...